every day I smoke cannabis. Every time you see me do an interview on the news, I've used cannabis. So if that's impaired, you know, I wonder what I would be like if I wasn't smoking.
That's Jody Emery, a.k.a. Canada's Princess of Pot. You may have heard of her husband, too, Mark Emery, also known as Mr. Spliff or the Marijuana Messiah. Together, they've become Canada's cannabis crusaders, leading the charge on legalization. And handcuffs have been a big part of the journey.
Hi, how are you?
Screaming on the text. So.
Yes, okay, yeah, thanks for doing this with us.
Hey, of course.
All right, let's go for a walk.
I'm City News reporter Shauna Hunt, and on this episode of The Legal Podcast, I meet up with Jody in Toronto's marijuana mecca. She sparks a joint as we take a walk through Kensington Market.
Right. Where do we want to do this? I mean, obviously we got to follow the rules.
There is, you go find a little corner with a bench, if there's one.
Right, let's do that. Yeah, I don't know why, you're right.
Kensington Market is a little neighborhood full of one-way streets and colorful alleyways. This is a place where stoners have always been free to roam. Jody's Joint is a very fitting name for her coffee shop. Along with brew and beans, she's hoping one day a wide variety of cannabis strains will also be on the menu. But it's unlikely she'll legally be allowed to sell weed anytime soon. Jody has one heck of a rap sheet.
I feel a little aggrieved.
So how many grams are in this joint that you rolled? Just out of curiosity.
My joints are under a gram. It's about 0.75. So to some people, it's a little bigger than what they would smoke. But it's not a full gram joint.
Would you smoke that whole joint?
No. I mean, if I was kind of really relaxed, yes. I'd smoke a whole joint. But typically what I do is I smoke half of it, and then I carry around what's called a doob tube. And you just put out your
so
joint.
So you can butt it out and
put it
and
in
keep
there.
It safe
smell
for
proof,
later.
Tuck it away with
smell
your
proof.
Yeah,
so it's in your pocket. It doesn't stink like a dirty roach.
Yeah, it's
right?
Great.
Now, I have to ask, you are known as Canada's Princess of Pot. Just how do you feel about that nickname?
Well, Mark Emery started his activism almost 25 years ago for cannabis, and CNN called him the Prince of Pot in 1997, so long before I was an activist. And that name, he just ran with it, and other media started calling him that. So when I married him in 2006, I was just automatically called the Princess of Pot. But I used to love Star Wars, the original trilogy only, and Princess Leia, totally an inspiration, tough chick, won't take any nonsense, Harrison Ford, oh, Han Solo, you know?
Sure.
So, like, I
You're
love
like,
it.
Oh, I'll own it.
Princess Leia, Princess Jody, sure. Okay, sure.
And you have owned it over all this time. I do want to talk a little bit about Mark, because you and Mark have become Canada's sort of poster couple or power couple when it comes to pot activism. And Mark actually spent time in a federal prison for selling, what was it, seeds?
Yeah, and specifically it was for financing legalization. So another seed seller in Canada who had vehicles and cars and gold and all sorts of stuff, he got 2 years probation in Canada. Mark Emery, who gave away millions, as documented by federal documents you can find online, I tweet them all the time, he gave millions of dollars to political parties, activist groups, court challenges, ballot initiatives. He changed the laws and changed the world with respect to pot from 1994 onward. The U.S. government said that arresting Mark Emery on July 29, 2005 was meant as a significant blow to the legalization movement, that he was the leader of a legalization movement, that he had been financing political groups active in the U.S. and beyond, and this is why they got him. So that was straight up political. That's why it took years to get through the court process to get him out of Canada, because he never even went to the U.S. He took a 5-year plea deal instead of facing 30 years to life. And that's what happens in our criminal justice system in Canada and the U.S. They hit you with really big charges for conspiracy. And that's what I got with the cannabis culture franchises we opened up recently. And they offer you a better deal. So it's like, do you want to go to jail or not? And Mark took 5 years as a plea instead of life.
So back then, though, Mark, like you said, he spent 5 years in a U.S. prison. And that didn't slow you down. That didn't muzzle you.
No,
you
kept had to step up.
you stood by him and continued on.
Well, I moved to Vancouver in 2004, and Mark had Cannabis Culture magazine going on. It'll be 25 years old next April, in fact. He started this magazine, and he was having trouble with it at that time, and I remember criticizing it. I was an editor. I wanted to be a broadcast journalism student when I moved to Vancouver. And so I wrote a list of what you could do to improve the magazine and what you could like take out of it. And he told me one morning, well, I fired everybody. I hired you now as the assistant editor. I'm going to edit. We're going to create a whole new magazine. So we started Cannabis Culture as a print edition. It was incredible. We didn't have any templates. Every page was a work of art. Then we had the DEA raid come months later, and he was suddenly facing serious time. And he said, Jody, I want you to be in charge of the head shop that we had and the magazine. And then his seed business ended, and we started a vapor lounge.
So you had to continue on with the legacy.
Yeah, and I ran for office.
The hard time.
Yeah, ran for office at the BC Marijuana Party twice, with the BC Green Party twice. I was the policing and crime critic. And then I sought a liberal nomination. I testified to the Washington State Legislature. I campaigned. I marched in the streets. I did so much work.
Right. Okay, so Mark gets out of jail, and shortly after, this is where the chain of Cannabis Culture dispensaries open up across the country. Mm-hmm. Just take me back to that time at the height, how many were operating. I know for sure there was one here in Toronto.
Well, when Mark got out in the middle of 2014, I was in the middle of my liberal nomination campaign, and I was kind of the de facto pot spokesperson for the party on the legalization issue. I was getting members and raising money and rallying support. And Mark came back and we were struggling. Like, prison is not cheap. Visiting him in the U.S. prison system, not cheap. And it was so hard. It was so many years of being just barely getting by. And then he got out and all these dispensaries were happening. And Trudeau was saying on the news in Winnipeg and elsewhere, we're going to legalize these dispensaries. And we thought, well, why don't we open up a dispensary? But instead of medical, we'll do recreational and medical for all adults, no discrimination, a model of what legalization should look like. And where we can have lounges like Amsterdam, make a lounge and a weed store in one. That's what legalization should look like.
Where was all the supply coming, though?
Well, from growers that have always been growing. It's medically licensed in many cases. And the medical marijuana program the federal government authorized, those growers serve patients who need it. And they know that so many other patients can't get doctors to approve them and cannot get access to the system that exists. So they would grow extra to provide dispensaries with the medicine that's helping other patients so that their cancer patient they're designated for gets theirs, but so do other patients who need access too. And it's growers who are craft artisans who have been families and generations growing this plant and being forced to hide underground. But Justice Department statistics show 95% of all growers who get arrested are not connected to gangs or organized crime.
I was going to say, the claims are that
they're gangsters and bad people. No, well,
it's organized crime supplying the operation.
And that's, now here's the joke. The three of us right here, you guys know that I'm smoking a joint. If this was illegal and you both knew, we're all guilty of, like, organized crime.
Cannabis Culture Shop, so how many did you have running back then? And what,
oh,
it was
the
it,
first
2015?
Store we opened was April 29th, 2016.
16,
so we only opened in, very recently. That was in Vancouver, and then we came to Toronto and opened two shops on Queen Street West and Queen Street East, sure. And that was in May. It was coincidentally the same day that Project Claudia happened.
At the height of the dispensary buzz in Toronto, Project Claudia mobilized, busting the pot shops, leading to 90 arrests along with 186 trafficking charges and 71 proceeds of crime charges.
So we came to do our grand opening of our first Toronto shop, and suddenly these raids are happening. So we went to the police headquarters the next day with the media, and there was a rally outside with patients.
And you sort of stormed.
On video.
You sort of stormed.
I was
the news
in the audience.
By the police.
I was asking tough questions alongside other journalists, and I got emotional. And it is on video. And the court said medical marijuana must be made available. That is why there are licensed producers. They benefit from the dispensaries laying the groundwork. Where are the victims?
Where are the victims?
Where are the victims? What I said is 100% true. It's exactly what happened and unfolded. It's also the day the criminal investigation began into me, and that went on for 10 months, and I got arrested.
Yeah, I do want to get to that, but during the sort of the heights.
Stores. So the franchise model rolled out so fast, but even though the documents say we got money for each franchise opening, we didn't. We, just before getting arrested, like the day before, we finalized our franchise document of what we wanted to ask, because I had over 300 emails across this country begging to do business and open a shop. Mm-hmm. So we're like, we need to reply. We made up a document with lawyers, and we asked for a certain amount of money. We never got that from any of our first franchisees. We got it, we were going to ask for it, and that's the police documents found these contracts and said, oh, they must have made all this money. No, we didn't. We were actually gifting to people the opportunity to set the model and see if it worked, because we'd never sold pot before.
Right.
So for us, it was like, could we even sell our brand as a pot-selling brand? We have to try it out. It went super fast.
Super
and
fast.
The maximum was, I think we had 30 locations listed. But more than half never even opened or got shut down the next day, including the five in Montreal.
During this time, though, you guys were making a fortune. I remember Mark showing City News tax receipts.
Mark Emery, since his early activism in London, Ontario, is a money-making genius. Right. But I was the owner of Cannabis Culture. Mark was a franchisee.
He didn't even
organize the whole thing. I did. I'd been the owner for like nine years of the company. He was a franchisee with an incredible shop. He did it his own way, as he always does, and he gave tons of money away because that's what he does.
I was going to say, I remember after the raids happened on Cannabis Culture, Mark showed his tax receipts, hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes was paid to the federal government. Yeah. Now, my question is, was that strategy to try and keep the government off your tail?
No, to demonstrate, hey, we want to be legal. We're paying everything legally. Right. We're open. We're above board. You can come find us. You can call us up. Check us out.
You're just trying to show them that you're a legit business and a responsible business owner.
Look at the jobs we can create. Look at the money we can create. Look at the economic opportunities we're creating for so many people, the employees and for the customers. Everybody's enjoying it. Everyone was happy. That's why it was so popular. People go, why did those dispensaries open up so fast? Well, geez, why do yoga studios open up so fast? Those yoga people, geez, they sure love that. It's getting everywhere. And same with coffee. Coffee shops on every corner. And that's because people want it. It's supply and demand. It's so basic. So all those dispensaries that opened up, they should have just legalized and regulated them into existence like Uber and Airbnb.
They were operating, I guess, in the gray market.
Disruptors who break the law but abide by the rules in every possible way they can and say, please give us a license. And the government says, no. They go, well, please give us a license. And the government says, no. And then the government says, hey, you don't have a license. We're going to punish you. We go, hey, we've been trying to get a license. Only you can give it.
Take me back to Pearson Airport.
We're getting in an Uber, speaking of. Sure. And I had just done media, just in a round table about cannabis legalization. And we're going to go speak at Spanibus. And we get out of the Uber and these plainclothes officers, and that's how they get you. They throw you off. They plainclothes and just come up and say, hey, Mark. And he says, yes. And they said, you're under arrest. And Mark turns and passes me his wallet. And then I step back and they say, Jody. And I'm like, yeah. And they go, you're under arrest too. So we're detained, and we asked to call our lawyer. We didn't have any money, we didn't have any weed, we didn't have anything with us, we're not smuggling weed stuff, that's not our thing. Smugglers.
At this point, did you know, or
no, I had no
know
idea.
That like all of your shops had been raided across the country?
No, they hadn't been, that's the thing.
And they got you first.
And that's why they refused to let us call our lawyers, because when we got taken into custody that night, and I got strip searched the first time, and then we finally got our lawyer, we got up into court the next morning, and they arrested our co-accused in court at that time, so we were not able to get our bail hearing. They arrested our co-accused in the courthouse, and that was all unfolding on live TV.
I was standing there when officers walked into the courthouse and they arrested some of your store managers and associates and just marched them out in handcuffs.
And then the judge that was assigned to our case said that he was having a heart attack and needed to leave, so there's video of him leaving on a stretcher because I don't think anyone wanted to handle our case. And then we had to go spend a night in maximum security because we weren't getting bail that day, so I had to get driven out to Vanier Women's Facility. And the process of being arrested and detained and handcuffed like cattle and put in a little metal box and hustled around, and you can't see, and all you hear is the beeping when you back up to get more prisoners in. It's very degrading, not pleasant, and that should not be happening to peaceful, nonviolent people.
Was that your first time being arrested?
Yes. So my real, but arrest, handcuffs, strip shirt, jail. I spend that night. We go to court the next morning, and all day it takes to get out. And we finally get out on bail. And that was not a good time. And
a lot of your associates, those charges were dropped. People working in your stores or store managers, those charges were dropped.
Yeah.
But you and Mark both got convicted.
Well, and two or three of our co-accused, also store owners, had also took a plea deal. But we got 18 people's charges withdrawn completely. 180 different charges withdrawn against those employees.
What were you convicted of? Was it trafficking?
I agreed to a plea deal with trafficking over 3 kilograms and possession of the proceeds of crime. So that's money laundering, they say. Even though I pay taxes on every single dollar I earned, but I guess it was weed money, but everybody has a dollar in their pocket that came from a weed deal at some point in time.
So as a convicted criminal in Canada, how has that affected your life since then?
Oh, it's been very tough. Royal Bank closed my account without any reason to. Again, I didn't even have much money in it. If I had money, the police would have said it. If I had bank accounts full of cash, I got nothing. I don't have a car. I don't have a TV. You know, I can pay my rent in Vancouver and I can manage to come out here and work on my new cafe business. But you know, it was tough because Royal Bank had been my bank since I was a kid. And losing your bank account is extremely difficult.
Traveling, too, has this hampered your ability to go to the States?
Well, the United States is a definite
no. That's not happening.
And then when I joked about, you know, if I had to find another job, what would I do? Well, when I was younger, I loved being a camp counselor and a summer camp counselor. I used to do babysitting. I can't do that now. I've got a criminal record. So I can't do that. That's sad. I love teaching art. It would be fun to work with kids and help them out and
but
stuff.
But you have a record. That would never happen right,
right
now.
Right. And now, and I'm also finding out that even when the governments like BC say, well, a criminal record for pot won't necessarily automatically ban you from getting a pot business, but money laundering or proceeds of crime, and I took that in my deal. And you
so,
know,
so you might not actually get a license to sell cannabis here. Yeah. Jody's joint in Kensington.
Well,
right now you're just doing the coffee
it.
Thing?
Yeah, we're selling coffee and hemp baked goods, and I'm trying to showcase all my hemp advocacy. I want to focus more on that. It's an exciting, positive thing, using hemp from building materials and food.
But this is not what you envisioned. You were hoping to sort of be a leader in this industry. And
I feel it's fair to say that the pioneers and prohibition victims who made this all possible should get at least an equal opportunity to the police officers and politicians who had us arrested to get into this business. At least equal opportunity. Maybe not first in line. If real fairness was at play, we made it happen. You know, it's like the story of the little red hen. She asks all the other animals to help her make the bread, and they all say no. And then she finishes making the bread after all the hard work of harvesting and doing it, and they all say, can we have some? And she says no to them, and she feeds it to her kids. But in our version, when we make the bread and do all the work and baked it, the other animals say, hey, you're not allowed any of it. Get out of here. And then they get the bread. And that makes me a little bit sad because that's just not quite fair. But I don't know. We're working on fixing the unfairness. That's my next campaign and
right.
activism.
Well, I did want to get into that. Right now, thousands and thousands of Canadians are sitting on pot possession charges, possession convictions. And the government on Legalization Day announced pardons for those who are convicted of possessions 30 grams or less.
It's symbolic. It's nothing but words.
Okay.
It's even the advocates of Cannabis Amnesty, the campaign working for this, say that doesn't do anything. It's still a record. It can be released again. It shows up on things. We need expungement. We need to recognize that cannabis should never have
completely
been a crime in the first
place. Completely wiped
clean
is what you are going to be fighting for.
Absolutely.
Now.
First step is easy to argue for possession because Canadians all know somebody who has that, and it's an easy compassionate sell, and it's most of the records. But we need to start talking about what other U.S. jurisdictions are talking about, saying that if you sold cannabis in a consensual, peaceful transaction and nobody was hurt and there was no violence or force, that should not have been a crime either. You know, and so we have to start with at least trafficking under 3 kilograms because that includes bud tenders at dispensaries. Well, mine is over three
over
kilograms.
Three. And
so there's under three and over three, the small times and the big bad like me, which is ridiculous. But this is what the law says. And so I feel the first wave will be possession. The second wave will be small time bud tenders. Right. Because why can Johnny sell weed at a government store, but his brother Joey has a conviction and can't get a job anywhere for doing the same thing a year ago? It doesn't make sense. So I think they'll deal with dispensaries, small-time trafficking, bud tenders, that sort of thing.
That will take time.
I think it's going to take 3 years to get to that point. If I'm in last in line, and it'll take 10 years before I can even apply for a pardon.
Now, I did ask Ontario's Attorney General, Caroline Mulroney, if she supports amnesty, and her answer was no. So what about the argument that what you did at that time, it was illegal, so you still have to pay the price? You broke the law.
Well, it's funny, you know. Many bad laws have only changed because brave people were brave enough to break them. We are talking specifically about civil disobedience, peaceful civil disobedience, breaking a bad law openly to say this law is bad and needs to change. And the only way to change it, because the government will not change it, is to break the law and go to court and win in court and have the court order the government. And that's the only way we've ever had anything changed for marijuana. Is it fair to say to the gay rights activists, the ones who marched for gay marriage, yeah, okay, thanks for paving the way. You can't get married. Other people can, but you can't. Like, that doesn't make sense. We have to acknowledge that the people who change these laws by breaking them openly, peacefully, they need to be recognized, and that's going to take decades.
So this continues on for you.
You can tell I'm pretty passionate about it, and yes, it runs deep. You know, it's like the wall of cannabis prohibition is falling, and one big chunk just fell down. There's still a lot more standing. There are still barriers. There are still restrictions. There are still a lot of problems. We just got to keep kicking.
Jody, thank you so much for joining us.
I really appreciate it.
A special thanks to Jody Emery for joining us, and a big shout out to my producer, Ryan Clark. You can listen to weekly episodes on frequencypodcastnetwork.com, and of course, subscribe to us on Apple, Google Play, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts. You can rate us, review us, tell a friend, and you can always reach me on Twitter at Shauna City News. That's Shauna with a U. And hey, I may know an awful lot about weed, but hashtag, I'm not a pothead. Talk soon. Next time on The Legal Podcast.
You can become addicted to marijuana, clearly. And I think people need to get their heads around that.
We take a look at the dark side of cannabis. Mm-hmm. It says early and regular use increases the risk of psychosis and schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm. That's true.